following Compass presentation from the Stealing the Mind of America conference, entitled Understanding the Times, is by David Noble. For a complete listing of all of Compass books and tapes, call 800-977-2177 or check our website, www.compass.org.
Well, thank you very much. Boy, oh boy, I can't see anyone. How many are here? Whoa, this is different. This is different. Well, anyway, when he called the office and said, would you be willing to come and speak to a Stealing the Mind? I thought he was going to steal some of my material, and I wasn't quite sure. But anyway, I found out what it was, and I thought, yeah, I guess I can do that. So I went home and I talked to my wife about it. She was in the kitchen, of course, barefoot. Stove was hot. I said, honey, I call my wife honey, you won't believe what just happened. She said, what? I said, I've been invited to speak at Stealing the Mind. Honey, how many great men do you think there are in the world? She said, I think there's about one less than you think there is. So you married men know what I'm talking about. Let me tell you, you can fool the world. You can fool the President of the United States. Can't fool your wife. You cannot fool your wife. And I'll tell you what, I don't even try anymore. Just doesn't pay. Takes too much time. Anyway, I've been told I only have 2 hours this afternoon, so I'm going to have to move into this material rather quickly. But I want to base my remarks on a verse in Colossians chapter 2, and it is found on page 1325 if you have the right Bible. And it readeth as follows. Beware lest any professor at the University of Wisconsin take you captive through vain and deceitful philosophy, after the traditions of Marx, Darwin, Nietzsche, Foucault, after the rudiments of the world. By the way, the rudiments of the world have never changed. Evolution hasn't changed. Socialism hasn't changed. Nihilism hasn't changed. And not after Christ. What a verse. Colossians 2 verse 8. It's the heart of our ministry in Manitou Springs. And by the way, we run a mini Steal the Mind conference. For you parents and grandparents that haven't heard about us, we're looking for your 16, 17, and 18-year-old sons and daughters, grandsons and granddaughters. And it's a 2-week program. You're only here a couple of days. We keep them for 2 weeks. Morning, noon, and night. And these are nice kids, but you know what? And they're fine Christian kids, but the vast majority don't have the faintest idea that there's such a thing as a Christian worldview. It's really sad. And as I say, these are some of our finest. And if some of our finest can't figure this out, you can imagine what the rest are. So, if you're interested in what we're doing, we have some brochures in the back there. Pick one up. Keep it in mind. And if you have anyone, really, in your church or young people's groups that have any leadership potential at all, that's what we're looking for. We're full all summer. We have a waiting list. But if you tell me they're good, I'll keep that in mind as well. Fair enough? Okay. We're going to move in a hurry. I hope you have a fast pen of the West with you. What I want to do is I want to lay forth some of the problem. I want to put on an overhead here part of the problem. And then I want to end with a challenge, and I want to show you exactly what I think is going on today, especially in education. And just for your information, we are losing Christian young people at our universities right now at nearly the 50% clip. That is, out of every 100 Christian young people going to our institutions of higher leaning, we are losing 50, some within the first 6 weeks, some within the first 6 months, and most within, of that 50%, within the 4 year span of time. We have analyzed that very carefully. We have come up with the reasons why this is, and we've come up with a game plan on how to at least slow that number down. And those of you that know what I'm talking about already, that's fine, you know exactly where I'm coming from. But to send your youngster off to the University of Colorado at Boulder, friends, is not exactly a safe thing to do, especially from a Christian point of view. Now, I'm going to start real simple here and real small. I'm going to start in first grade, and I can see you. I hope you can see me. This comes from Newsweek, March 20th of this year, in a column by George Will. In 1996, when he was a first grader in Medford, Oregon, public school, his teacher rewarded students' reading proficiency by allowing them to bring from home and read to the class a story of their choice. Well, this first grader brought a story on Jacob and Esau. That seems real innocent. Although this mentions neither God nor God's manifestation and miracles, Zachary's teacher refused to allow him to read this because, quote, of its religious content. The teacher said it amounted to reading the Bible and might influence other students. When Zachary's mother complained, bless her heart, she's one of my heroes, whoever she is, the school principal backed up the teacher, saying that the reading was the equivalent of a prayer, and said that Zachary and his mother do not appear to be public school material. I like Zachary. I like Zachary's mother. Someone at least stood up and said, boo. By the way, to me, that's a mark of leadership today. Okay, that's first grade. Third grade. By the way, I'm looking for the common denominator here, in case you're wondering. What is all? Look for the common denominator here. Third grade, Superior, Wisconsin. I pledge allegiance to the world, to care for earth, sea, and air, to honor every living thing, except the unborn. By the way, I just threw that in there. With peace and justice everywhere. That's the new Pledge of Allegiance that was going to replace another Pledge of Allegiance, which most schools can't use right now because it contains a very dirty word. Yeah. Ooh. One nation. Careful, careful, careful. We have lawyers in this meeting today. I moved to the high school level. Roger DeHart teaches biology. Roger DeHart is also using a textbook called Of Pandas and People. By the way, I saw that out here someplace. With his boyish face and engaging brown eyes, Mr. DeHart was a popular and effective teacher. 2 years ago, following a student complaint, the American Civil Liberties Union started intimidating the school board with threats of a costly lawsuit. This is the tolerant group in our society, by the way. This is the loving group in our society, as most of you know. But 2 years ago, following a student complaint, okay, critics accused Mr. DeHart of teaching creationism. Those students testified that he never talked about God or religion. Indeed, he presented the issue so objectively that students could not even tell what his position was. Yet in 1998, a new superintendent ordered Mr. DeHart to cease and desist from teaching students about intelligent design. He could, however, still talk about problems with Darwinism. However, this May, the administration came in again and said, wait a minute, You can't even do that anymore. For example, the textbook that he was using referred to Stanley Miller's 1953 Life in a Test Tube experiment as evidence that the building blocks of life arose spontaneously in a primeval soup. It's called ooze. The scientific word for that is ooze. On the early Earth. But today, most biologists dismiss that experiment as outdated. However, even though he used an article from Scientific American to mention this point, the school said you can't use that article. Can't even use the article from Scientific American. Again, one of the most famous examples of natural selection was the peppered moth. Supposedly, when industrial pollution darkened tree trunks, birds could spot them and so forth. Most of you know that issue. Dead moth, but he says, in a recent article in The Scientist, not a religious publication, by the way, a scientific publication, reveals that these moths don't ever rest on tree trunks. That the photos were shown in the textbook were staged. Dead moths were glued onto tree trunks. Yet the school forbids Roger DeHart to correct this false impression for his students, even though it comes out of a scientific journal. I am now moving to Kentucky. High school. Still in high school. Today, schools and courthouses in eastern Kentucky are taking down the Ten Commandments. Here we go again. But my friends, it's not just the Ten Commandments they're taking down. They're also taking down the Mayflower Compact. In fact, I have a list here of everything that was coming down, and this is at the command of a federal judge, Jennifer Kaufman. She said these were a violation of the First Amendment. You want to hear the list? Listen to the list. Excerpt from the Declaration of Independence, which said all men were endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights. That had to come down. The preamble to the Constitution of Kentucky had to come down. It said, we the people of the Commonwealth of Kentucky grateful to Almighty God. Whoa. Had it said grateful to Almighty Carl Sagan, been all right. The national motto had to come down, in God we trust. A page from the Congressional Record had to come down because it mentioned the year of the Bible. The proclamation by Ronald Reagan in 1983 referring to the year of the Bible had to come down. A proclamation by President Abraham Lincoln designating April 30th, 1863 as the National Day of Prayer and Humiliation had to come down. An excerpt from President Lincoln's work in which he included the Bible is the best gift God has ever given to man had to come down. And the Mayflower Compact had to come down. That's in eastern Kentucky via the American Civil Liberties Union. Let's go to college. Christian group, Tufts University. Some of you remember this incident. Happened, May of this year. A Christian student group at Tufts University. Wasn't Campus Crusade for Christ. What was it? Christian Fellowship? Oh, InterVarsity Christian Fellowship. InterVarsity. At Tufts University has been banned from using campus facilities and stripped of university funding after it refused to consider a lesbian member for a senior leadership position. Incidentally, the latest is that they have now reinstated this group on campus, but it was quite a struggle for quite some period of time. But what's interesting is, at the same time, they threw this Christian group off of campus. Listen to this. 3 HIV instructors in Massachusetts are at the center of a growing controversy after reportedly conducting sexually explicit workshops for teenagers and holding sessions to train teachers in the art of injecting positive homosexual themes into public school materials down to the elementary level. Where do you think they held these meetings? Tufts University. 2 state employees in the HIV division of the Department of Education and an HIV consultant with the Department of Public Health met in a teach-out at Tufts University. The event was sponsored by the Gay, Lesbian, and Straight Education Network. So on one hand, they can throw off the Christian group. On the other hand, they can bring in this particular group. Now, is there a common theme so far? Is there a common theme? Okay, let's stick with our university. I have here a letter from a parent who sent their daughter to the University of Oregon. I want to just read this one paragraph here so you get an idea of what this is. Our daughter was raised in a Christian school and in a Christian home where we taught her Christian values and morals, and she learned that Jesus Christ is the way of salvation. 2 years out of high school, at 20 years of age, she enrolled at the University of Oregon. We were apprehensive, but we trusted her judgment as she had always shown clear vision. We did not know that this is one of the most liberal universities in the nation. Incidentally, it's not, but as far as the mother was concerned, it was pretty liberal. Unfortunately, she was overwhelmed by her professors and began to believe their philosophies. Now, we challenge our young people at the summit that if you don't understand what this entails, you shouldn't leave the summit until you understand what this entails, or you will be just another statistic. Notice, she began to believe her professor's liberal philosophies. What does that mean? What does that mean? I'm going to show you a little bit of what it means this afternoon. She graduated 2 years ago with a... Now listen to the majors here. This is the scary part. You would think I was going to say philosophy and anthropology. No. She graduated 2 years ago with a degree in underwater basket... No, that isn't true either. Let's see. She graduated 2 years ago with a political science and English degree and has turned her back on everything she believed in. You mean English and political science? You mean you can lose your Christian perspective in English and political science today? My friends, just as easily as if you took philosophy 301 and anthropology 402. Just as easily. English today is now considered the oppressor's language. If you think you're going to learn English in English class today, you're of a different generation. You will learn everything but English. And political science. What in the world can they do in political science to corrupt that? By the way, to begin with, political science is an oxymoron. There is nothing scientific about politics. But the truth is, it is an art. I'm not arguing that. It should be political art, okay? The art of deception, for example, and things like that. But here she is, a 20-some-year-old young lady who loses her faith and turns her back on everything that she believes in while studying English and political science. By the way, the big lie is still being taught today in political science. Fascism and Nazism are on the right wing of the political spectrum. That is such a humongous lie concocted by the Frankfurt School in the 30s with Adorno. And by the way, Adorno's book is still being used in our college textbooks today. The authoritarian personality is still being used. And here was a Marxist organization that tried to paint the conservatives and the Christians as Nazis and fascists, so they literally moved the spectrum over and included the right as being fascist and Nazi. My friends, that was never true. Never true. Mussolini, the day before he took over the fascist party, was the head of the Socialist Party in Italy. In fact, he was the editor of the Socialist newspaper. And Nazism, what are we talking about? German Workers' National Socialist Party was part of the right? Never part of the right. Never conservative. Part of the totalitarian dictatorship of the left. But that's the lie that is being propagated today, even in our political science departments, and I'm sure this young lady ran into it. Listen to this. She has turned her back on everything that she believed. We are trusting God to bring our girl back home. The wait is sometimes difficult, but we are on bended knee. What's going on? What's going on? I have here a letter from a dad. Let's see if I can get that one. From a father who sent his daughter off to another school in Oregon, of all places. Where is that one? Well, if I can't find it, I'll give it to you. Oh, he's the editor of Access to Energy, in case some of you are wondering. Here it is right here. Access to Energy. This is dated December of 98. I won't read it. I'll just tell you what happened. He sent his 18-year-old daughter off to the University of Southern Oregon. He says she's a shy 18-year-old girl. He just wanted to major in science. As I said, her dad's a PhD in physics. Let's see here. She took calculus, physics, and chemistry, all at the 200 sophomore level. She also took music. She got A in calculus, A in physics, A in organ, B in chemistry. Don't be a dummy. Let's see. It is true. Oh, now she was being kicked out of the university. I guess I didn't tell you that. Yeah, she was asked to leave the school. She was asked to leave the school because she refused to take one course of study for a whole semester on the state-sponsored religion of Oregon. Well, they don't call it that. They don't call it that. But he says it's nothing more, nothing less than atheistic secular humanism. She said, no, I just want to take chemistry. They said, no, no, you're not going to do that. You're out of here. To make a long story short, they forced her out, by the way. After her first year, they forced her out. But the good news is, in May of this year, in the May issue of Access to Energy, she's back in. She's back in. And he writes a letter thanking those who have helped him get her back in. But he said, some of you have sent letters, some of you have sent emails, but my lawyer sent them a threat to sue for $120 million, and he thinks that has something to do with it. So the school got enlightened very quickly. And the little 18 shy girl is now back in school. She's going to graduate with her degree in chemistry, and she's going on to Berkeley, I believe, for her PhD in chemistry. Well, when she gets to Berkeley, let me tell you, she's going to have more fun than any human ought to have. But knowing her, I think she can handle it. Especially if her dad keeps his lawyers. What's going on? What's going on? And why are Christians always the last to figure this out? Why are we always 2 days short and $2 late? Or is it 2 days late and $2 short? Whatever it is, we're late and short. Well, we figured it out at the summit, my friends. And here it is, right here. We see this up here. This is what we have to think about. And I want to think about it this afternoon. This is the humanist ball team that our young people are involved with, my friends. They're down near the catcher in the batting box. Some of you know baseball, is that right? I did this because it's baseball season. We could have used football too, but some of you can't spell football. Baseball! There's a pitcher, is that correct? Now some of you can't see all this, so let's just go through it rather quickly. At the summit, we take these one step at a time so that the young people really grasp. I'm just going to mention one quickly because I know our time is going to be up before too long. Whoops. That's me. Oh. Pitcher, John Dewey. Southpaw. Catcher, Isaac Asimov. Head of the American Humanist Association until he is now deceased. First base, Paul Kurtz, editor of Free Inquiry magazine. Second base, Colas Lamont, author of the Humanist Philosophy textbook. Shortstop, Julian Huxley. Now let me just say something here. I want to read this because I know we're going to be taped. And you might not be able to... I just want to make sure. I'm Julian. In other words, we could take our time in each one of these key players. But let me tell you, this is a ball team. This is a ball team. And we're sending our 18, 19, and 20-year-old kids up to bat against this ball team. And I'll tell you something, friends. If they don't know what they're up to, they're going to strike out every time. Every time. Listen to this. This is from Norm Geisler's Encyclopedia of Christian Apologetics, page 346. This is on Julian Huxley, in the section on Julian Huxley.
One day, while browsing through a library in Colorado Springs, Huxley came across some essays by Lord Morley in which he found these words: "The next great task of science will be to create a religion for humanity." Huxley was challenged and fired by this vision. Huxley took up Morley's challenge to develop a scientific religion. He named it evolutionary humanism. Well, there he is, friends. That's the team he's on. He's the shortstop. Look who's third base. Bertrand Russell. Why I am not a Christian, Bertrand Russell. Left field. Personally, they all belong in left field, but I had to spread them around just to make the ball team look decent, okay? Left field is Richard Dawkins. He is famous for a book called The Selfish Gene. Incidentally, right now the humanists are in a dither over this book because they're trying to figure out how to explain altruism if every gene is selfish. Good question. And Peter Singer at Princeton right now, who came to Princeton with a lot of furor, as you recall, Peter Singer has now put out a little booklet trying to figure out how to get altruism from the selfish gene. All I can say is, have fun. Don't think it's going to work. Center field, Margaret Sanger. Some of you have heard of her. Founder of Planned Parenthood, Margaret. Her grandson is in Colorado Springs this weekend. He came to Colorado Springs, and front page of the newspaper, he came to Colorado Springs because Colorado Springs is known as being a pro-life conservative bastion. Whoa, tough. He's going to take on the James Dobsons of the world, says the grandson of Margaret Sanger. And who invited him there, my friends? You think the secular humanists invited him there? No. No, the pro-choice Republicans invited him to Colorado Springs. Yes, whatever that means. And then right field is, who did I have up in right field there? Carl Rogers, psychologist Carl. I could have used numerous others. Abraham Maslow could have gone up there. Eric Fromm could have gone up there. I have the manager of this ball team, by the way. If you don't think these are heavy hitters, look who the ball team manager is, Ted Turner. Ooh, I struck oil. Or Buffalo. Struck Buffalo, Montana, Ted. Yes, he's up in Montana right now. He is now feeding his buffalo certain foods so that they will not attract wolves. And you know what's interesting? They think Christians are crazy. Anyone here want to try that meat? We'd be better off eating the wolf. Besides, they're delicious. Tastes like the bald eagle. I like this group already. We have a little sense of humor here, huh? I thought PETA was here in Big Forks. I don't see any of PETA here. Maybe you had them for lunch. I don't know. Yeah, they're too tough. Good point. You don't want to bite into those PETA people. They're tough. You got to fry them real well. Good sense of humor. I'm happy to hear that. I can hear you. I can't see you. Okay? I can see some of you glistening, however, your eyeballs saying, "Where did this nut come from?" Manitou Springs. Yes, our slogan of Manitou is, "We know nothing and we can prove it." This is quite a ball team, but you know what? This isn't the most serious part of the ball team. We have our young people standing up to bat against this ball team every day for 4 years in college and 3 years in graduate school, and now it's down in the high schools. But the most serious part of that ball team is the sponsoring group, the crowd in the stands cheering this team on. And my friends, you need a lecture on that sometime. The American Humanist Association. But that's not even the most serious. You know the most serious? the foundations in America that are sponsoring this ball team. I'm talking about the Ford Foundation, worth billions. I'm talking about the Rockefeller Foundation, worth billions. I'm talking about the John and Catherine MacArthur Foundation, worth billions. I'm talking about the Rubin Foundation, worth billions. I'm talking about the Playboy Foundation, worth millions. These guys lack not one nickel in the whole nine yards. They are sponsored, my friends, and they are powerful. I'm talking about the American Civil Liberties Union, one of the most powerful organizations in America. I'm talking about the National Education Association, one of the most powerful organizations in America today, as some of you well know.
That's what we're up against. Because what we're really facing today, and I know you can say it's just the educational area, but it really isn't. It's throughout our whole society. If you've read James Dobson's book, Children at Risk, he makes clear that this battle is permeating every level of our society. In fact, since I have it right here, let me quote exactly what he says on that, on page 22. He says, the humanistic system of values has now replaced or outstripped the Judeo-Christian precepts in the universities, the news media, that's ABC, NBC, Clinton News Network, in the entertainment industry, in the judiciary, in the federal bureaucracy, in business, medicine, law, psychology, sociology, in the arts, many public schools, halls of Congress, and then he makes it clear. Indeed, the resources available to secular humanists throughout our society are almost unlimited in scope, and they are breaking new ground almost every day. Their resources are unlimited because they have millions and billions of dollars through the foundations that are pushing this ball team. Is this a serious confrontation or no? But one other point. And to me, this is the big point. We have been told that we can't have little Zachary read a little story from the Bible because he's bringing religion to the classroom. We can't have prayer in football games in Texas. The Supreme Court ruled. Can you imagine the Supreme Court has to rule on a football team saying prayer before a football game? The Tenth Circuit Court up here in Salt Lake City had a rule on a high school because they were going to sing Friends for graduation. And at the same time, this is going on, and this is going on right before our very eyes, the secular humanist ball team that I put on the board here is just as religious as Christianity. I have written on this. I'm updating another book that I printed a couple of years ago called Clergy in the Classroom. My friends, we have to grab a hold of this point. Secular humanism is a religion. Julian Huxley said our goal is to make evolutionary humanism our new religion based on science. And the whole war against Christianity was declared in 1866 in Britain on a secular society scale. It was reinforced in 1893 by Thomas Huxley, who said we're going to destroy Christianity with science. It was brought into this country through the Fabian Society, headed by John Dewey, by the way, who was the president of the League for Industrial Democracy. As he said, we're going to create a new social order, and it's going to be without Christianity. That's what's going on. And the reason this young lady lost her faith at the University of Oregon, and thousands of others of our students are losing their faith every day in our schools, is because their faith, i.e. Christianity, is being replaced and subverted by another faith. I have with me here John Dewey's book. It's called A Common Faith. Is there anything in the title that smacks of religion? Well, if there isn't in the title, there is in the back of the book. This book is published by Yale University Press. On the back of the book, it says religion. John Dewey says, I quote, Here are all the elements for a religious faith. Here are all the elements for a religious faith. Now, unfortunately, this part of my lecture is about a two-hour lecture, and I'm going to give it to you, and I only have a few minutes left. Is that right? Let me just point out just a couple of things here that you need to hear. One of our students in Cincinnati sent me this from a Dear Abby column. Listen, this is Cincinnati Inquirer, September 6, 1999. Dear Abby, after reading a letter from Frustrated, all the letters to Abby are frustrated, who was looking for an alternative to a religious wedding ceremony, may I suggest a secular humanist clergy? Secular humanist clergy, that's their ball team right here. This has access to every one of your colleges and universities. Now here's the secular humanist clergy saying, I'll do the marrying. I'm a humanist minister from the Humanist Society of Friends, whose celebrants, ministers, chaplains, counselors, and pastors are all secular humanists. You can find us throughout the United States and Canada. For details, readers can call the American Humanist Association. Toll free, 1-800. I'll give you the number, 1-800-743. Some of you might want it, 6646. I have performed non-religious weddings, funerals, and name ceremonies since 1963, when I first obtained my license from the state of Ohio to solemnize marriages. My state license is identical to that of any other clergy. Huh? How can this be? How can we be so stupid? How can we be so stupid? I have here the mother of all truth, the Harvard University Gazette newspaper. On the very front cover, on the very front cover, I have the humanist chaplain at Harvard University. You heard me. Chaplain. It says here, humanist chaplain serves ethical non-believers. Just for your information, every humanist has a lot more faith than I have. When you understand what they believe, here is the Reverend Thomas Farrick at Harvard University, friends. He's the humanist chaplain at Harvard. I want you to hear this on page 10. Reverend Farrick says the following. By the way, he's sponsored there by the American Humanist Association. That's this group right here. Okay? The American Humanist Association sponsors this chaplain at Harvard, and he says when first-year students voluntarily indicate their religious affiliations during registration each year, fewer than 200 check off humanism as their religion. Now wait a minute. How can this be? Christianity has been removed from the schools under what guise? Separation of church and state. Is that correct? And now, all of a sudden, we're told that the secular humanists are clergy, and they're permeated the whole country, and they're allowed in the classroom. Can Margaret Sanger's group get in any high school in this country today? Well, you know. If Planned Parenthood knocks on the door, they're in. And by the way, if they're not in, the lawyers are right behind them from the ACLU. But hang on to this. Here's what he says, and this should be the tip-off. Moreover, only a fraction of those actually seek his guidance. That's good. That may be because humanist students do not relate to their religious or ethical figures the way other students relate to theirs. As a non-authority figure, I'm not as needed, he says. Not only do these students require less guidance, but they are being constantly reinforced in their humanist beliefs in the classrooms. Well, that's my point. That's my point. Their secular, humanist, religious beliefs are being taught in the classrooms of America, and they are fulfilling to a T exactly what Julian Huxley called for. Evolutionary humanism as the new religion based on science. And friends, that's the battle for the mind of our young people today. That is exactly the issue today. I have one other I just want to show you this. I still have a couple of minutes. Has Chuck marched out here? When I see Chuck, I leave, I know. And he's a marcher. This is what your young people are up against, ladies and gentlemen. I have here the basic four worldviews that are vying for the hearts and minds of our young people today. The only one I don't have on here is the postmodern worldview, and I'm working on that. In fact, I've just written a chapter on that particular worldview. But here we have the secular humanist worldview, the Marxist worldview, the cosmic humanist worldview versus the Christian worldview in 10 categories. The 10 categories that are strategic, and because they are the essence of a worldview, are theology, philosophy, ethics, biology, psychology, sociology, law, what's the next one, politics up there, economics, and history. Those are the most deadly areas right now in our curriculum. We lose 95% of our Christian kids in one of those 10 categories. 5 more days left. I see your hand. That is the battle line there. And what we do is we tell our young people, look, here's where the secular humanists are coming from in all 10 areas. Here's where the Marxists are coming from in all 10 areas. Here's where the New Agers or the cosmic humanists are coming from in these areas. And this is the Christian position over here. So that we literally can summarize what they're up against and then give them the Christian perspective at the same time and establish them in their own Christian faith. Isn't it amazing? Christian young people today can't even defend theism. They can't even defend theism. They have no idea if there's a Christian philosophy or not. They have no idea if there's Christian philosophers out there or not. And they are catching on the biology section, and a lot of our young people are catching on. Wait a minute, there's a little difference there between evolution and creation, isn't there? Yeah. So they are doing some work there. Law, you had a speaker here, Alan Sears, on law. Is that correct? Let me tell you, friends, we need Christian lawyers right now. We need Christian young people to go into law. We're going into a new century. We're going to have lawsuits up to our gazebo, and we need Christian lawyers to come to our defense as well. We need Christian politicians. Isn't that, this doesn't sound spiritual, does it? What are you talking about? This is the Christian worldview. This is the Christian worldview. And in the book, I give you the biblical basis in all these areas to show that this is part of the creative order of God. And then we take these 10 categories and show that all these 10 categories are based on Jesus Christ Himself. They are literally part of the redemptive order too. So, is there a biblical worldview? Yes, there is. Is there a biblical Christian worldview? Yes, there is. That is all that we have to give these young people before they step up the plate and face John Dewey and all of his comrades in that battlefield. But I'll tell you the good news. The good news is that if we ground these young people, they can go to any university in the world. They can go to Moscow State University. I don't care. They can go to Stanford. They can go to Harvard. They can go to Princeton. They can go to Yale. They can go to the University of Wisconsin, the University of Minnesota. Come on. They can go to all these schools if they have their feet on the ground. I have a letter here from one of our students who went through our program, and he went to Columbia University, and he said... something rather interesting. Listen to this. He said, this is a kid that's prepared to go to college, okay? As a former Summit student and Excellence Program graduate, I always enjoy playing guerrilla warfare with my professors. I am a student attending Columbia University here in New York City. I won't read the rest of the letter except this last line. I want you to know that I am presently working with other Christians to produce the first Christian newspaper at Columbia University. We have called it the Christian Standard, and he sent me 3 issues. And they were professionally done. Can you imagine Christian young people knowing how to spell? Write. Think. And take on their professors and not hang it up. One other quick story. One of our students got out of the Summit 2 years ago, went to Georgia Tech University. Very first class. Very first class. A Marxist feminist professor. Right out of the chute. He took her on the very first day. She wrapped Christianity right out of the chute. He stood up and defended Christianity, but as he stood up, and he wrote me a 3-page letter, by the way, and said something like this, as I stood up, I knew either the material I learned at the Summit would hold or I was about to go up in smoke. I am writing you and letting you know, not only did I not go up in smoke, it held, and 3 weeks later, the professor came up to me and said, where'd you get all that material? And he said something about Manitou Springs, Colorado. And he was able to witness to his professor. So, can our young people do it? Yes, they can, friends, but they need your help. And I argue that the greatest thing they need is preparation to go off to do battle. Come on, you don't send an army to do battle unless they're prepared. And right now, the university is a battlefield par excellence, and as Dobson is absolutely right, it's a battle for the hearts and minds of our kids. The game plan is basically 15 to 26 years of age. You're over 26, you're senile, your feet are in concrete, they're not going to waste a whole lot of time on you. You know what? That's basically true. And I think most of you know that. The money they're spending is looking at kids between the ages of 15 to 25 in that area. And that's where we come in. We're having a great time doing it. Appreciate your attendance. Thank you all very much. God bless.
If you'd like a catalog of all of Compass audio or videotapes, call Compass at 1-800-977-2177. Or you can write to Compass at 460 Canfield Avenue, Suite 1000, Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, 83815.